Excuse me, this conference is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 2nd of November, we have Alan Greenberg, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Tatiana Kramsova, Mike O'Connor, James Bladle, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Paul Diaz, Barry Cobb, Stephen Mutisami, Ron Wickersham. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Linda Sangiri, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies today noted from Ted Suzuki and Michaela Nalon, and also to let you know that Mason Cole will be joining the call late. Please, can I remind you to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes? Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. All right, we have a proposal that came out yesterday, and I know there's been a lot of discussion going on and among various parties over the last week or so. So I think we're off to an interesting start. I have some ideas of how to proceed on the longer term, but I think for today I'd like to turn it over to James or whoever he delegates, since he sent it, to talk a little bit about the origins, if you care to, and the philosophy, and then perhaps we can go through it a bit at a time and get comments from the rest of the group. Paul?
Thanks, Alan. I'm not sure if you get a touch on this when you talked about ways forward, but I'm wondering, you know, that some of us have put together this proposal, put it out to the list. I'm wondering if there are others on the working group that have their own ideas that they're going to want to publish and whatnot, or are we basically going to use this as the foundation and we start adding, subtracting, et cetera?
Well, I've been working on another one, but in trying to figure out how do we go forward, I don't like the idea of treating this as, proposals from two sides and then, having a negotiation as such over them. I'd like to put the ideas on the table. Cheryl, maybe you can speak for a minute. We've had some a very successful methodology that's been working for on the Morality and Public Order, the REC 6 working group, and more recently on the GTLD applicant support working group, yes, of coming to closure, where people have started off with some very diverse views, and instead of trying to do things as a single proposal, we've tried to break things down into the component pieces, and then see how close we are to consensus on each given item as we go along, and I think that may well be more successful than to try to have overall competing proposals as such. Cheryl, do you
have any...
I'm not
sure what you want me to say about it, because you just described the process specifically.
Well, one of the difficulties we're going to have, which didn't quite apply on those groups, because there weren't people... In both cases, these are groups without large people with vested interests, and therefore we really looked at the consensus over the working group as a whole, whereas here, as we've seen because of the split in some of the positions on the surveys we've done, that I'm not sure just counting hands is the right way to do it. And I'm wondering if you have any insight based on your work on developing these procedures, how we can go forward, without pasting stars on people's foreheads, but at the same time not being overwhelmed because any given group has more numbers than others.
Okay. You've sort of got several things running in that question. Mm-hmm. One is the matter of balance between supply and demand, and the other is mechanisms as to how you can actually reach consensus or near consensus on outcomes regardless of what the balance is. I don't think I need to address the first one I described, because it is what it is. And, we all know that. The second one you raised, which was first in your questioning as to potential methodologies, I think you'll find that if you apply the type of methodology that has been used in REC 6 and JIS, what it would certainly do is a quick first run is allow us to see where we're very close to agreement, or a tiny tweak will do it. And if they can be dealt with and then put to side to fatten on their pasture, then perhaps we can look at negotiation, in inverted commas, with anything that's left. And it may very well be that some things are intractably different depending on from which side of the approach you're coming from, and so be it. If that's the way it is in the final report, then that's the way it is in the final report, from my perspective at least. But we don't even know at the moment, other than the few reactions that have come in on this first thing that's been put to the table. When Australians say tabling, or when New Zealanders say tabling something in the meeting, we don't mean taking it away. We mean putting it down for discussion, not removing it from discussion. So I'm very careful with how I say these things.
That's what comes from living on the other side of the world. The direction.
Yeah, you should all try it sometimes. It works well. But why not have a look at what we've got and see what else does or doesn't shake out. But I wouldn't want to see it become a here is my offer and counter offer exercise, mainly because I don't plan on making PENDR my life's work. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with how well, for anything where there are multiple components, and that certainly is the case in our
yeah.
situation, how well it's worked to not try to say, this is my position, this is my proposal, this is your proposal, in the sense of the VI working group, but try to break it down and say, as will be one of the first examples today, the number of days. And, fine, one
yeah.
group says five, someone else says 49, and we try to see how close we are to consensus, and if there is no consensus, try to characterize the majority minority report, if we can have such a concept, but at least the two different positions, but not to tie them all together in a single bundle, which I think is to some extent what made the VI ones intractable.
Okay, but is there a suggestion that this is a single bundle, this is a negotiation issue, or this is a good start, can we now start working on it? Because I'm not clear that any predetermination has been made on that.
No, there isn't. And I'm proposing that we not treat it as a single bundle, that we treat it as a discrete set of components. And obviously, as we have the discussions, there'll be other issues that are added in and some taken off the table because we agree with them point blank. So I'd like to use that as the method going forward. Today, I'd like to start just discussing what was in this particular message and see where we go on that. I should look at the screen and see if anyone has a hand up. Jeff.
Okay, thanks. One other thing I wanted to add to that is that if we could go through this and also with the different, one of the most important things I think sometimes we neglect to do is to look at this, this proposal, and Alan, when you put yours forward and all the others, and also just to make sure that they do address the charter and the reason that we put this PDP together in the first place, because I think a lot of times that gets lost in the details, and I think we should all look to that and say, does this address the concerns that started this PDP, and to make sure of that. And negotiating over days might not, if both solve it, then, that's other issues. But let's also look and see, do these proposals resolve what the issues were, why this working group started in the first place? And I think we need to do that before we sort of move forward.
I believe the intent, and Marika and I have looked at this a little bit, is to try to formulate any recommendations we have as applicable to the charter questions. So I would hope that anything that's coming out of this does pretty directly relate to the charter questions and not something off in left field. But I'm sure someone will try to keep us honest if we stray.
No, just if we can. Just I always like to make sure that we are addressing the concerns there in some of the proposals and some of the items we discuss, because, that's sometimes we forget about the charter. Sometimes I actually bring it up and put it up on the screen so I remember what actually, what were the issues that need to be addressed and make sure that we, when we're looking at these, that they do address those issues that started this PDP.
Yep. Can't disagree on that. Anything else before we start looking at the details of this proposal? And Jeff, just to be clear, I don't think I'm going to come out with a single proposal and say this is Greenberg's proposal. I think we're going to start trying to develop recommendations, find things we have we do have consensus on, and then identify other things that perhaps we don't.
Right. Oh, okay. I thought that you had said maybe I said
I do have one, but I don't think it's going to serve us well to come out with dueling proposals at this point.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I thought that you had said that you were going to, in the email, you said that you were going to send it out, but that's fine.
No, I said in email I'm going to have more stuff.
Okay. I guess I combined it from what you said into the email. Sorry, my mistake.
Okay. Who's taking the lead from the registrars on this?
That's James. I can go ahead and speak up on this, Alan.
Okay.
And, you know, again, this is, I think maybe was born in discussions amongst registrars, but, you know, has definitely branched out from there. And I think the conversation started with this idea that, you know, was not clear that, you know, another 6 months or even 12 months of continuing to discuss some of these issues was going to bring some of these topics any closer together. The working group, and so it was more of an attempt to identify those things that could be driven towards a consensus, and you know, identify where the middle ground exists, and to try and flesh that out and drive towards that. And
let me interrupt. I think quite independently, a number of us have been going in that direction in the last week or so. So yes.
Sure, sure. I mean, nobody wants to see a PDP have its second birthday, right? I mean, this goes for Kedner everything else. So you know, I think that we're all kind of keeping one eye on the calendar and one eye on all of the other developments in the community that are likely to land on our to-do list here in the next, you know, year to 18 months. And we all want to kind of bring some things in for a gentle landing and have something meaningful to bring back to the community to show for our work. And in that regard, you know, I mean, something that I've always held to be true is that, you know, in a consensus-driven organization, not being able to achieve consensus is a legitimate outcome, and it essentially favors the status quo. So what are the things that we can find consensus on? And that's where we tried to boil down some of these key elements here with these three objectives in mind. And hopefully everyone's had a chance to read this. I know I posted it kind of late yesterday afternoon, which is probably in the middle of the night, Cheryl's time. But we wanted to provide some additional safeguards to protect against inadvertent, and I think that the key here is inadvertent loss of registration. And we wanted those to be backed up by consensus policy, so that if a registrar, you know, or other contracted party that we haven't invented yet in the future didn't provide these safeguards, then the compliance would have something to push off on. We wanted to inject some uniformity into the registrant experience with how what they can expect when it comes time to renew or expire a domain name. And I think, importantly, we wanted to do, achieve the first and second, I have a typo there. We wanted to achieve the first and second objectives in a way that was as minimally disruptive to all of the activities, aftermarkets, ecosystems, practices, tools, and systems that have developed in the last 10 years. We don't want to necessarily, with a stroke of a pen, have someone throw out something that's very popular or very useful. And I think that we need to be mindful of that. So that would kind of be that, with an overriding desire to. Yes, Ron, that's correct. That is a typo. So, you know, with all those in mind, we wanted to sort of drive those elements that can achieve consensus and start to coalesce group discussions and possibly draft recommendations around those. I will tell you that we've already received some feedback on the list on this, but just even getting a lot of the contracted parties to see eye to eye on this has been a real challenge. I always kind of giggle whenever one says, registrars or registries act as a block. I can tell you firsthand that that's possibly the more lengthy cat-herding exercise is getting everyone on the same page there. So, this is what I think that we can confidently put forward that would be palatable to most individuals under most circumstances. So I think when we start talking about, well, we would like to have X, Y, and Z added into this, then we start to immediately see support for this drop away. And so I just wanted to put that out there. I know this isn't a negotiation. I'm just trying to emphasize that boiling things down to common denominators, we have a lot of downstream consequences when we start tweaking these things. So I was hoping that they would come forth with a little bit more inertia than apparently they had. So we'll go through them individually here. And I'll just mind the cue, Alan, but if I start to ramble, then just talk over me, okay?
Understood.
Okay. So the first part is we're proposing a new grace period. Haven't come up with a catchy name for it, but clearly it needs one to distinguish it from existing grace periods. And during this grace period, the name would be essentially untouched, and only the RAE can recover or renew this name during the grace period. It will not go to auction. It cannot be. It could be explicitly deleted by the registrar, but that would simply commence the RGP, the registry redemption grace period. So that's the first thing. I know there's been a lot of discussion about how much time is appropriate, 5 days versus. I saw some other ideas floated out there. I think that we want to preserve the intent of this. This is to ensure that there are not that names are not lost due to checks crossing in the mail or the electronic equivalent thereof, or someone being on vacation or being a bank holiday in one country and not the registrar's country, etc. So it's not. At least the initial intention is not that this be a overriding grace period to cure all ills. This is really just to put some wiggle room in there for coordination of payment purchases purposes. And I think the analogies we're drawing from here is that if I forget to pay my electric bill, if it's due on the 1st of November, and I say, shoot, I forgot to pay that, and I send the check out today. That's no problem. But if I were to wait until
the subscriber's phone is switched off.
Okay,
I think that was the conference call's way of saying that Cheryl has something to say.
Okay, well, I just wanted to finish my analogy. That if I were to wait 20 days or 30 days before sending my electric bill, I shouldn't be surprised when I wake up in the morning and the lights are all off. So. So we're trying to build in that type of a grace period. And Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, James. And I can assure you that was not anything from Asia Pacific that I was responsible for. However, I thought the timing was kind of cute. And I also can't help myself by saying, of course, James, you'll have at least received in my country one, if not two, notice and final notice before the power is disconnected. And a clear note that says how much it'll cost you to get reconnected as well. But that aside, the reason I put my hand up was what I liked about what I saw when I did read this as it came through, and thank you, James, and everyone involved for putting something on the table using the Australian and New Zealand meaning of being on the table for us to start interacting with, is that any time that we have a known amount a piece of information that registrants can be assured is a given, we're already starting to see something that most of us desire, and that's a degree of predictability in how this whole thing runs. So I just wanted to wave my hand and say that one of the great advantages I see here, not discussing numbers, not discussing how numbers are generated, but what I do like is an amount of time that is a given that people can then understand and we can then educate about. Now I'll put my hand down.
Oh, I agree, Cheryl. That's a good point. And I think that the key thing before I jump into the rest of the queue is that, you know, this really, in some respects, provides some certainty to how a registrar will disposition a name upon expiry. They will hold it. They will not, execute whatever their business practice is. And believe me, through the course of trying to put this together, we've been discussing this, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different approaches to skinning these particular cats. And I think what it does is it provides some uniformity, and I think that's what I like about it. And Alan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, no, I'm not taking it over. I'm put my hand up as a speaker. You're still the acting chair at this point. What came through in what you said was different than what I read in the text, and whether that's the fault of the text or the reader, we'll leave up as a decision for later.
Probably the reader.
Probably. I took this as...
No, you mean me reading it out just now, right?
No. I meant me reading it yesterday. this is getting difficult. This is a difficult audience.
Sorry.
No, what I took it, and I think the way a number of the other people who responded on email took it, as this is the 30 days or the 45 days or the 60 days or whatever that is being cut down to 5. And what you're presenting is a different new grace period, which is a different thing than what has been discussed before. And in that light, I think it has a lot of merit. I'm not 100% sure all of it comes within the charter, as Jeff was discussing. For instance, I'm not sure to what extent under the charter we could demand, if you forgive the expression, that something not go to auction. All that could be discussed under the charter, I think, is that the auction not be finalized. But I have no problem with registrars volunteering to do that. And in that light, I take it as a different... period than the 30, 45, 60, 15 that we've been talking about in much of the rest of the PDP.
My understanding is that's correct, Alan, that there's a 30-day RGP, which, you know, if the registry supports it and if the registrar offers it, is available. There's a 45-day ARGP, auto-renew grace period, if the registrar supports it and offers it, et cetera. And this is where all the the wonderful, diverse business models that form our industry start to come into play. Essentially, what we're saying is, hang on a second, let's take 5 days, and regardless of all of those different variations, let's say that, during these 5 days, this is what the registrant can expect. So it's not... It's really not adding to or subtracting from existing grace periods. It's providing a common baseline of grace periods that no matter, who is involved in the provider chain, the registrant can expect the same thing.
Yeah. One more question before I give up the mic. For a registrar that redirects websites to a splash page, Would the implication of this be it not be done until after 5 days, or might this be done in parallel?
I don't think we made any discussion about whether it does or doesn't redirect, whether, there was a healthy debate about whether it should shut off entirely and go dark, and we really didn't dive into what happens to it during those 5 days.
Was just a question if it was understood or if it's still up for discussion. Okay.
Ron also has his hand up.
Yes, this is Ron. The I see it as an additional grace period rather than a uniformity of current grace periods, but that may be because I don't understand if this will, in a sense, eliminate some of the other grace periods and combine them into this one. But as far as being predictable, the current method is, I don't find anything unpredictable about a domain name expiring and the date it expires. That's predictable. So adding a grace period, in a sense, a five-day grace period, doesn't make it any more predictable. It just is another little, in one sense, complication. But I also respect some of the discussion you brought up in presenting it about some of the goals. So I think it may come out more. I sort of felt that it did go beyond the charter, but I don't think that we should be strict. It doesn't seem to me that some of the other things that we've discussed that go out to the edge are justifiably removed because they don't have absolute explicit definition in the charter. So I'm quite agreeable to seeing this additional grace period be implemented, and wouldn't object to it on the basis that it didn't have an explicit indication in the charter.
You know, if I can touch on the first thing that you said, Ron, I think that one way to look at this five-day window is that the auto-renew grace period is a 45-day window should the registrar choose to offer it, et cetera, et cetera. I think what we're saying is, regardless of what the registrar's practices are, 5 of those 45 days must be allocated for use by the registrar, or RAE, sorry, and made available. So in a sense, it's taking that 45-day period, and it's taking the first 5 days, the most critical 5 days, and it's reserving them for this one and only person or entity to execute this one and only function, which is to renew. And all of the other things, by all of the other parties, essentially, you know, can wait until day 6. So we're trying to take this flow chart that quickly turns into spaghetti after the expiration date, and trying to say, you know, let's just tack on 5 days after that, and all of that stuff can still happen. It just has to, you know, wait a second.
Wait.
And that's kind of what we're getting at there.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that clarification, because you added that it is part of this other grace period. It's just an additional definition of that 45-day grace period, and it's an additional thing. I will point out that currently, I mean, renewing the domain name before it expires, even if it's an hour before it expires, only the RAE can renew it at that point as well. So you say recover, renew. That's confusing if the domain continues to operate at one, then it, in a sense, it's not recovery. It's still renewal. It's just that the due date is extended by 5 days for any practical purpose. Or is there another thing of the recover/renew aspect?
Ron, if I could interject, as Alan, I think we have not
we've not used the words renew and recover during the post-expiration period uniformly, starting in the issues report and going forward. And I think something that, that needs to come out when we finish is to make sure we do use these words uniformly. And I think there's rightfully some confusion right now. So your point is well taken, but I don't think it's unique to this particular paragraph. I think it's something that we've a sin we've been committing all along. So it's something we have to be cognizant of as we go forward, I think.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll I see the queue is clear, so I'll move on to renewal notices. And this is the second element that we'd kind of try to put some common proposals around. And this is the idea that there would be a prescribed minimum number of renewal notices set out to according to a predictable schedule, with the understanding that registrars can always send more. And in fact, I think that in the case of GoDaddy, our renewal notices schedule has been called annoying or pestering. But we send out dozens. So just to take a look at this one here is, we want to leave the method open-ended because while I think email is pretty much understood to be universal, we didn't want to hard code that into a policy where a certain business model, for example, dictated that registrars like to maintain telephone communications or SMS or some other product or service with their customers. And that a renewal notice would be sent to the registrant no later than 10 days prior to expiry. I may need some help with that because I'm trying to think if it's no earlier than 10 days prior to expiry, but maybe I'm just overreading that. And that there would be a second notice prior to the day before the expiration date that would also notify the RAE that the five-day grace period proposed above is now in effect. And so I think that, this is a minimum of two notifications. Would augment or possibly replace some of the language in the EDDP, but, of course, we'd have to take a closer look at that. But it's the idea that, here's a minimum bar that registrars are free to exceed. In the service to their customers, they're free to choose the method of or the communications channel that is most most likely to elicit a response, and they're free to build upon this minimum. But at least registrants can understand that they'll have some predictable experience no matter which registrar they choose. And it looks like we have Cheryl first, and then Alan. Go.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, here. Just again, just to share my knee-jerk reaction when I read this, there was a high degree of comfort from me because it fits with familiarity, at least from the CC space operation that I'm most familiar with, where we do have a requirement. It's part of the code of practice that at least a notice goes out 60 and 30 days prior to expiration, and then what people do on the day of expiration or post-expiration does vary, and so I didn't read it coupled with the first part, but reading it separately from the first part, it made sense to me because you were talking about an amount of time that appeared to be at least reasonably distanced between each other. It is possible for people to be away from a given method of communication for, in excess of 3 to 5 days. We could argue perhaps that, you could be away from that method of communication for in excess of 10 to 14 as well. But I thought I just would place into the mindset here that not, again, hardwiring the amounts of times, the fact that you've got to know later than helped me there, but it fitted with a method that we've had no consumer discomfort with, where a required 60 and 30 and then usually a little bit before, if not on the day, or in some cases after the expiration date, further notice with different information goes out. So I just want to put that on the record.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl. Alan, did you still have your hand up?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to delve a little bit more into the logic between the numbers. We had a lot of discussion earlier in this work group, and there seemed to be a general consensus that that one notice round about a month ahead of time fits very well with monthly bill payment in companies, with the amount of time it takes to issue a check within a company, and was likely to be acted on within that time frame. Assuming someone was paying attention to the notice, of course, but assuming that is the case, that a month is a reasonable time given the cycles and the elapsed time that things take. And it strikes me that 10 days, although you're saying no later than 10 days, so a registrar could choose to do it 30 days out, or 120 days out for that matter, but 10 days seems to be a bit short as what might be the first notice that the expiration is coming up, just based on how businesses react to these kind of things. And I'm curious as to where what was the logic in coming up with this.
Well, I think there's a couple of schools of thought, and I'll certainly open up for other registrars to share their experiences. But sending something too far ahead of the expiration date doesn't get the desired result. And sending something, too close to the expiration date doesn't get the desired result. And I'm sure that arguments can be made all over the place on why some folks respond to early notices and some folks wait until the last possible minute and exhaust whatever grace periods are currently provided. I do believe strongly that there is a diminishing return, that the benefit between, let's say, two notifications and three is much more striking than, let's say, the 99th notification and the 100th notification.
Mm.
I think this is probably an area that's open for discussion, and I think that your point about sending a notification that includes some time to account for businesses' accounts payable processes is probably a valid one and should be factored into our discussions. But I see that Mikey now has his hand up.
Oh, yeah, but that's on a slightly different topic, James. So if you want to let this one play out a little longer, I'm happy to wait.
Well, I guess I'm at this point. I'm kind of taking being the spokesperson here, but I would like to hear from some of the other registrars as what their thoughts are as far as 30 versus 10 versus 5, or what the right number is. And Paul has his hand up now.
Thanks, James. Yeah, from Network Solutions perspective, I guess we'd be open to talking about pushing it out maybe 30 days, something like that. Just from my perspective and my two cents here, when we cobbled this language together, we really were focusing on that no later than 10 days and felt that was the bare minimum, recognizing that, a longer lead time than 30 days is probably, more comfortable for people, and we can talk about it, but of course we're working within the construct that there are two required messages. And so what James is saying, if you start pushing it further out, we do run the risk that people are not focusing on those messages because they think they still have plenty of time, et cetera. So I guess, we've put this one out there, and at least from my perspective, I'm willing to entertain a different particular day. But, I mean, it was, at least from my perspective, focusing on that no later than 10 days with the view that there's only going to be two messages required. And for the record, just like GoDaddy, Network Solutions sends out a whole heck of a lot more than two notices. So, there's plenty of room for us to maneuver.
Alan, can I jump down to Jeff and get
Just a quick, a very quick comment. Just for the record, I wasn't really trying to haggle here or negotiate the number. I was just curious as to the logic, which moved from what we originally had talked about as allowing enough time for business practices, but not too far early that, you know, a notice 6 months ahead of time is clearly going to be ignored. You know, I just got a renewal for Consumer Reports for a subscription that expires in February 2012. I'm not honoring it. So I was just wondering why you went to one that was so short with a minimum time, but could be as early as 6 months out instead of the kind of window we were looking at. And I said I really wasn't trying to negotiate. I'm just trying to understand if there was some logic or pattern behind it. In any case,
well, you know, and the original registration possibly is a factor as well. I mean, if I registered something for 10 years, I would probably want to know when there was only 6 months remaining on its active cycle. I registered something for 1 year. I think that there's a lot of variables here, that it's not a one-size-fits-all. And so Paul is correct that by saying, you know, it's no later than, you know, we're essentially putting some stakes in the ground here and saying, you know, registrars know their customers and they want their customer to renew. You know the best way to contact them, and you know how frequently or you have statistics on what works the best, but just so you're aware, here are some, common minimums that should be, you know, readily agreeable to everyone. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks. You know, what I was thinking was maybe instead of looking at it this way is to say, because I was thinking about, you know, I know no one's haggling about the dates, but about on the number of days, is I know maybe Marika had done this in her previous analysis to say, you know, looking at most of the registrars and how much of a grace period they give now, and to say how many domains, let's call it under management, what's the average length of time, because this might be a moot point, because if, you know, 99% of the domain names under management, their registrars have, you know, an average of 28 or 30 days, then, I mean, we could mandate, you know, this guarantee, but then I think that would also, you know, sort of say, is the number of days an actual necessity for us to discuss? Is that the issue? So we could sort of maybe move on. We had put, Alan, to address what you said, we had just put that in to just say it's a bare minimum. I mean, I can't speak for any other registrar. We're not planning on changing it, you know, to that 5 day if that's the number, or 10 days if that's the number. We're going to keep it at our, you know, at our date, which is closer to 30, because we want renewals. So I think that might be worth delving into and looking into and see what the average domains, the average amount of time registrars give to their customers based upon our earlier research.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Mikey, is this, have we swung around to your topic yet, or should we just continue to hold play for you?
No, I just didn't want to disrupt the day's conversation. So if we're feeling like we're done with that, I'm ready to slightly change the subject.
That's Alan, then, I guess. That's up to him if he wants to continue on this thread, or is that something new?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind people that from the very beginning, we've always said we are not worried about what some of the bigger players are doing. We're trying to find the bad actors, the people who don't have good standards, and looking at providing some way to make sure they do some things responsibly. If we had been in this just to change what GoDaddy does, we've wasted a hell of a lot of time. Because although I'm sure people can pick things that they don't like about it, it isn't the kind of issues that we went to the trouble of starting this PDP over. So,
but I think that
we just need to keep in mind that it's not whether your practices or Jeff's practices are going to change significantly. It's, are we going to put in place something to make sure that the people who don't follow those practices do in the future? And that was the rationale to begin with.
The rationale between, you know, between some of these ideas, Alan, is that there's a lot of space between, you know, what we're all doing here as far as the registrars that participate in this group and, indeed, the registrars who participate in ICANN versus the folks, the outliers. And I think that it's pretty clear that we can draw some lines here that, you know, would bring those other folks into the fold.
That's the hope.
And, guys, can I just do Jeff again? One last comment, and I think the other reason why is besides getting in those, you know, whoever these bad actors are or the ones who do this, or actually they're not bad actors because they're within their regulations to do so, but I think it's to bring in everyone has said, the level of predictability for those ones that don't advertise and don't keep, you know, it out there. I think everyone will know, and this was getting out there, say, you're guaranteed, you know, that you have that time versus, you know, 30 days versus 29 versus 31 and allowing those people to renew it. I think that's the piece for those, what, you know, is these guys, whoever they are, that may be that you know, the ones who have the unpredictable or whatever processes that, I guess, started this whole PDP off.
That's a good point, Jeff. And you're absolutely right. They're not bad actors if there's no policy to guide them. Go ahead, Mikey.
Thanks, James. This is Mikey. First, this is really the first time I've spoken about the proposal, so let me chime in on the same theme, which is I think this is a great start, and I really appreciate the effort. And the question I have on this particular topic was whether during your discussions amongst the registrars, the alternate form of letting people know discussion came up. You know, we've talked a lot in the working group about the registrant who is there are really two forms. One is the registrant whose name has gone dark and the email is going to the same domain, and so that's not an issue before expiry, and this is all pre-expiry, so that's kind of moot. What I'm really interested in is the person whose name was acquired through a vendor that has gone out of business kind of scenario. And I was just curious if there were any conversations during the formulating of this around those kinds of sort of alternate forms of notification.
You mean the registrar has gone out of business, Mikey?
No, Joe's pretty good web builder who got a domain for you and built a website, and now the web builder has gone out of business, but they registered the name to themselves rather than to the owner of the actual site. And, you know, part of this, I think, goes in the education pile for sure, which is, dear registrant, if you think you own your domain name, go check the whois and make sure that your name is in the contact information and that your email is there, blah, blah, blah. So for sure, I think, you know, part of it is education. But the other part is the notion of, you know, an alternate form, a la SMS, a la phone, alternate email address outside the domain that's been registered, that kind of stuff, and whether there's any room to, you know, I'm a little cautious about mandating specific solutions, but I am kind of keen on the idea of some kind of alternate communications channel to the registrant, just to make sure that, because, you know, the example, the personal example that I've got is a guy who never got any of the notices because it was going to the wrong place and he didn't know it. So that's,
well,
that's fine.
I mean, I think that that's something worth discussing, Mikey. I'm not sure where to fit it into this or the other. It probably belongs with this one, but, you know, I mean, I would point out that if your web hosting pretty good web builder place has inserted themselves in as the registrant or, you know, as the contact information for phone number and email and fax number, then they're going to do it probably for SMS or whatever other methods we include in here. I mean, I guess there's no what am I trying to say here? I think that they can just continue to bypass whatever intention we're trying to get at with that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm sort of making this up on the fly. I have to kind of cogitate about it. That's why I was curious if y'all had thought about it at all, because, frankly, you guys deal with it more than I do.
I mean, think about it. I just don't know that there's a universal solution. You know, one of the things that I think we kicked around very early in this group was giving some additional responsibilities to the billing contacts, which is a required element that we have to capture and maintain for each domain name registration, but really doesn't have a whole lot of responsibility or purpose, you know. But if we made the billing contact essentially the end-all, be-all, you know, renewal entity, I mean, that's, and this is, you know, you're brainstorming, so now I'm counter-brainstorming.
I see your brainstorm, and I raise you to brainstorm.
But it was just something that I think, you know, that came up earlier. But I see we're getting close on time, so I just wanted to go to Paul on this topic.
Yeah, thanks, James. I mean, you guys have already touched on what I was going to try and interject. You know, I guess a two-part answer for you, Mikey. One, yes, we have at least considered alternate communication channels, but in the ICANN world, it's rare that something technologies are ever mandated, so that's why we had the clause by a method at each registrar's discretion. It's certainly available. Registrars can do something else, but email is going to remain, I think, the industry norm or standard. And then as far as, you know, the scenario, and I think I know the particular case you're talking about, where, you know, some middleman, a web host or a graphic designer, somebody else goes out of business, you know, as James has already touched on, how does the registrar know that that person's no longer in the loop? So when we have these other communication channels, we build out a very sophisticated way of reaching out. We're still reaching out to a black hole. You know, I mean, ultimately, as we've repeatedly said, there's an element of education, and you know, if people value their domain names, good Lord, they have to understand the rudimentary fundamentals, one of which is check the who is. If it's not in your name as the registrant, you better find out why. And, you know, you can't expect registrars to be all-knowing and doing all things. This isn't a nanny world we live in that we can lead everybody by the hand and make sure that everybody is constantly taken care of exactly the way they want. It's just impossible.
That's a good point, Paul, and I think we really early on we just, you know, discussed the idea that a registrant who doesn't know they have a domain name through an intermediary party or doesn't want a domain name looks exactly the same to a registrar as someone who wants to keep their name but is having, you know, communication troubles getting that renewal through. And, you know, we can put a lot of systems in place to guard against that, but I think we'll always be able to brainstorm up exceptions of why they will fail in individual and specific cases. And I think that if we're chasing that last percentile, I don't know that that's going to be a successful effort. Mikey, your hand's still up, or you want to continue on this one?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm hiding out far away from my spouse, so if somebody else can take my hand down, that'd be good.
Okay, Alan's next.
Now, I'm going to uncharacteristically put on my registrar hat now, which I don't have. I mentioned something, a scenario similar to this, early on in the process
where a registrant had created a website, registered domain name, and the web hoster put the name in their own name, unbeknownst to the customer. And I was quite rightfully told that that's a business model which the web hoster may have, which indeed may be a selling point. That is, we will help you provide a website, and it may be the guy who builds it or the guy who hosts it, whatever, and you don't have to worry about any of the technical details. You will not receive any trash mail. You will not receive questions you don't understand. And that's a valid business model. It still doesn't address the issue of what happens when that guy in the middle goes out of business. And I don't really see how we can fix that other than education, other than saying the registrar should go inspect the website and see if they can find any hen scratches or something that tell them who might be interested in the fact that the domain's about to disappear. And that's not a business practice that I think would be viable in most any of the worlds we're looking at right now. So I see it as a real problem, but I don't think it's one that we're going to be able to fix within our domain. Excuse the pun.
I think that's correct, Alan. I mean, and there's a gray line there. You know, there's some fuzzy logic that says once the middleman or the intermediary has substituted all or nearly all of the contact data with their own information, then aren't they then, for all practical purposes, the registrant?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I did have a case where the registrar, the web hoster, put their name in who is halfway through the year. And then didn't renew it properly, but that's fraud, and that's a different issue altogether. Also,
right, right. So, can we jump to? I see we have something in here about Whois, and I'm afraid that if we dive into that now, that we'll be here until Cheryl goes back to sleep. So. Maybe we can skip ahead to the education section and defer on the Whois issue just for the purposes of managing.
We do have a half hour left.
Well, I'm concerned that anytime you bring up Whois, you know, you better have most of your call left. But you know, I think one of the things we put forth, and it just comes up, you know, in discussion of any of these substantive matters, is this idea that, you know, we've got to make sure that the consumers, whether they're registrants or intermediaries who are providing other services and are registering domain names on behalf of other entities, you know, we have to make sure that the folks who are interested in retaining names that they have registered are aware of their responsibilities and obligations, are aware of the practices that registrars are going to, you know, execute, whether they're existing or whether they're changed somewhat based on this proposal here or whatever comes out of this group, and that, you know, we have to leverage. It's not enough to, you know, sit in a room or on a teleconference, as many of us, almost all of us ICANN insiders are apt to do, and come up with and solve all these problems without closing that loop and getting it back out into the wider audiences and making sure that they understand what's going on, what's changed, and what mechanisms are available to them, and at what point they have essentially missed their opportunity to uphold their obligations and their responsibilities as well. So I think that, you know, we talked here about putting together some education and outreach. This would be a best practice recommendation, and I think that you would see that there would be a lot of support amongst the registrars for doing this, not just with expiration, but possibly even, for example, for transfer issues. I think that registrars would definitely show some enthusiasm for developing a site that would be of neutral content, that wouldn't pick favorites amongst registrars, but it was essentially talk about some of the important concepts and obligations and benefits of domain name registration.
So you're proposing that a registrar would do this, but in the name of all registrars?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have a registrar stakeholder group within ICANN, and we, I don't know how we select or whether we draw straws or play spin the bottle or something like that. But, you know, we're able to work, I think, together to come up with a designated registrar to host and design collaborative websites. And I think that we could do something similar for this exercise.
Great.
I don't know. Jeff and Mason probably know a lot more about that than I do, but I know that there are some, let's say, neutral, referee-type websites out there, and I think that we could certainly do something as well. And then we're also looking to the ALAC. You know, we feel like you guys have the closest. Outside of our commercial relationship with our customers, you know, I don't know how big the ALAC is, but now I can safely say that we're representing the commercial interests of millions of folks who choose GoDaddy. I think that the ALAC has other avenues of reaching wider audiences and can leverage those relationships to build education and awareness and help get this message out as well.
Alan's got his hand up.
Go for it, Alan.
I'd like to thank you for this. ALAC has been fighting for several years for us to get some money that we can then decide how to spend. So I'm glad you're on our side when we go back and ask for it again.
Okay. I have my hand up, but it's not on that point.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you. I as you've heard me go on ad nauseum throughout this whole PDP process, you know, getting the information in a clear, simple language and understanding mechanism out at the edges where the registrants are has got to be the key. And I think that's where we have absolute unanimity in terms of, you know, where we want to be at the end of all of this. Just purely on an editorial point of view, ALAC, of course, should be in a position, which is, of course, a 15-person committee to advise ICANN.
Right. I made that mistake again. At large.
No, I'm happy the way you've written it, ALAC, This is what ALAC should be doing. It should be working directly with ICANN and with the component parts of ICANN to make sure these types of resources, et cetera, are out there and facilitated and promulgated, and that the information is sent out. It would use, however, so I'm suggesting an additional sentence would be, for the network of at large, that's capital A and capital L, which is our nearly 130 at large structures, which is global penetration, which is what you were talking about, should then use those tools. So I'd actually be taking it a little further and saying part of what ALAC's mandate, and it's the bylaw mandated part of ICANN that needs to be told, it has to then get this information out through its network, and its network of at large to become an accredited at large structure. You undertake to do just that. Push out from ICANN and bring back to ICANN relevant information. So it fits absolutely with why the existence is there of the at-large movement within ICANN, and I think it's a great thing.
Okay, well, maybe you can
we can wordsmith this part together, yeah.
Exactly.
We got this meeting on Wednesday the 8th in December in Cartagena. Maybe this could be on the agenda.
For this group or for at-large?
Well, we've got an at-large and registrar meeting.
Oh, yeah, okay.
ALAC and registrar meeting, actually. But, yeah, this is exactly where the educative process has to go. It's no good just putting up a really good-looking site and no one knowing about it. We actually have to get it promulgated.
People do that all the time.
Yeah, and that's been a success.
Okay, so we have 20 minutes, so we'll maybe circle back and touch on the Who Is thing. And I wanted to put here...
I'd like at least 10 minutes though at the end, so let's start Who Is, but let's not try to finish it right now.
All right. Then maybe
I'll talk a little bit about what we do next.
Okay. Maybe I'll just put out how we arrived at this.
Okay.
And the answer is we could not achieve consensus amongst the group that was working on these proposals. There are some, and I think one gentleman who's very well-known and well-liked and outspoken is not here today on the call, but feels pretty strongly that we should have some recommended changes to WHOIS. Some folks feel that, you know, could go either way, and some folks feel pretty strongly that we couldn't. So what you see here is the result of lengthy discussions that were unable to achieve consensus, even amongst the smaller group that put together these compromise proposals. So it's not saying that we're all agree there should be no changes to WHOIS. It's that we can't agree whether or not there should be changes to WHOIS, and I think that, you know, that would certainly translate into a lack of consensus in the larger group as well. So that's where we're coming from on this. And then I'm finished, by the way, Alan. So it's all you from here on out.
Okay. I was just going to make a quick comment on WHOIS, and basically it's what I put in the email I sent out just before the meeting, that WHOIS is one of the few things that we've actually had reasonable consensus in this group. It perhaps was not unanimous, but close. On the other hand, it is also the only thing that we're talking about which would have a significant work impact on virtually every registrar and every registry. And therefore, that, I think, needs to be taken very carefully and judiciously and looked at as to how we would go ahead. And I think where I'd like to talk about to go in this in direction in future discussions on this one is there some way we can structure something so that we aim N years out to achieve what we're doing, but not necessarily mandate it for everyone in the very short time frame. And that's going to require some voluntary efforts on behalf of some organizations, both registries and registrars, to implement it, even though it's not mandated, perhaps for a good number of years. And I think I'd like to investigate it from that point of view, in that it's probably going to be too much to impose on everyone immediately. On the other hand, it is a target that most of us feel would really be useful. So I'd like to pursue it from that perspective as we go ahead. Any other comments before we talk about what how we're going to proceed next? No comments. All right. I'll address that in a moment. Let's do the housekeeping first. First of all, we're at the point where we need to make a decision as to what we want to do in Cartagena. The last time we talked about it, I think 2 weeks ago, maybe more, we talked about that we were probably not going to be in a position for a public report at that point, certainly not to get it out in the deadline for formal discussion of things, which is less than 2 weeks out from now, but that we definitely hope to be in a position where a work group meeting would be viable if there are enough people attending. And Marika, I think there was a discussion on sending out a doodle to find out how many people were attending the Cartagena meeting, and I don't remember seeing that. Did I miss it, or did it not get done?
I don't think that got done. I can work with you, so we can get a notice out to so people can indicate whether they're trying to attend or not.
Let's get it done. Go ahead.
No, I was saying maybe we can do as well a quick poll on this call so people can just, raise their tick mark when they're going to Cartagena.
Tick mark if you plan to be in Cartagena.
I'm away from the computer, but yes.
Okay. We have 6 ticks, 1 X. Ron hasn't commented. 7 ticks, including Cheryl. Okay, some people will not be there. Many people will be there. Since we're definitely not going to have something ready to document in time to have a formal discussion on it, I would suggest that we try to book a room at a time where there won't be too many conflicts for the people interested in this group, and hope that we're at the stage at that point where we perhaps can make some
very significant progress in the recommendations. So that's a challenging demand, Marika, and, but see if you think you can do it.
Marika, if it's any help, the at-large and ALAC schedule is out, and Heidi can give you the link for that.
Yes, so then, Marika, I have a question. Would work for most people if I would maybe look for a breakfast slot, because that normally doesn't conflict with too many other things that people would like to go to, although I do know that some people don't like to get up early in the morning either. But would that be something I could explore?
From my perspective, if it's a catered breakfast so that we're not, you know, spending time in the hotel dining room or something and try to conduct business, I think that could be viable.
Cheryl here. The answer again is yes, but we already do have some breakfast meetings in the at-large schedule, so please have a look at that.
I will do.
Thank you.
Okay. In terms of how do we go forward, I'd like to revert back to the model that's been used in a number of other groups, and I would suggest that based on this recommendation, this proposal, and other issues that are raised as targets, as proposed recommendations over the next little while, that Marika start drawing up a set of recommendations, and as Jeff indicated, group them so that we understand which charter question or questions, because some of them may overlap, are they addressing, and start putting together recommendations as discreet and simple as possible so that we can decide easily whether we have consensus on this one, we don't have consensus on it, or what the multiple options are if we have different variants that people are proposing. And start slugging through them and see if we can start identifying at least a reasonable critical mass of things that we do have consensus on, and then try to either attack the ones that we don't have consensus on and fix them, or provide, you know, majority, minority, or whatever partial consensus as we start drafting a report. Does that sound reasonable? At least we'll be able to see how close we are and identify which items are the critical ones and which are not. Last question is the timing for this meeting. This meeting was at a different time in Europe. By next week, we will be everyone in the Northern Hemisphere will be on daylight saving, or almost everyone who has daylight saving in any case. And I would suggest that we move the time UTC for this meeting so that the North Americans and Europeans are all back on the same time we normally hold this meeting. Is that a reasonable position? And for those who are in different parts of the world, does that make it too unreasonable for you?
Helen?
Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
I would love to see it shifted back, and for consistency of meeting times, that'd be a great thing. I was just going to ask, a couple of us have a previously scheduled call next Tuesday. It would begin at 3 o'clock. So that means we'd only be able to do about a half hour on this call. As we're not going to have a report or anything, a formal publication for Cartagena, would it be horrible to push next week's off, like meet again in 2 weeks' time?
Given the few number of meetings we have, and we only have four more weeks until we leave for Cartagena, I'm reluctant to say that we skip that one. To what extent is this at all the registrars involved in it? I'm not sure who's involved.
Possibly three. And I think we're in other groups, Alan, that are also driving towards Cartagena, and some of them are trying to also drive towards getting some documents by the publication date. So, we're just trying to prioritize here a little bit.
I'm happy to skip next week, Alan, honestly.
Well, I was going to make a proposal. We've seen more substantive traffic on the list in the last 24 hours than we may have in any given month. If we can actually keep the discussion up, in both directions, not just tearing apart James's proposal, but you know, constructive things and trying to move forward, then I'm happy to skip the meeting. But we really need to keep moving forward on this so that by the time we get to Cartagena, we have some, we can give a report to the GNSO, if nothing else, which says we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. If everyone thinks we can put the effort into it and the time into it to continue with that, I'm willing to skip the next meeting.
Alan, I'm so tempted to say live in hope and die in despair, and there I've said it. I think the point was being made that a lot of the pressure on at the moment is stuff that has the same, if not tighter, publication pre-pub, pre-Cartagena demands on people. And so we can all say, yeah, Alan, we will, but then I suspect we also know what's actually going to happen.
I understand that, but I'm saying if we can keep up some level of work, then we won't have lost the 2 weeks completely, and I think that's important. The publication date is just about 2 weeks from today, or 2 weeks from yesterday. So yes, Cheryl, I'm aware of that, but to the extent that we can do something, then I would like to see some progress continue to be made. Barry?
Thanks, Alan. This is Barry. I was just going to say, you know, no problem about skipping next week, but let's, if we can, go ahead and plan on every Tuesday for the remainder of the month, so the 16th, the 23rd, and the 30th, if that's possible.
That would be my
intent. Get them on our calendars now, and thank you.
Yeah. Marika, is there anything else we've omitted that we need to do before we leave?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then I give everyone back, what is it, 11 whole minutes of your day.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for a good, productive meeting, and let's continue on the list.
Bye.
Bye-bye, all.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye, all. Thanks, Alan.